Item seven, which is the council's risk profile, is, I don't know who's going to do that. Is Wendy going to present that or is it David?
I'll present that, Chair.
Okay, I think everyone's here, so if you'd like to go ahead. Just before you do, the way you put that, you did that sort of summary in the first part of the letter was very good, I thought. Thank you. Let you go on now.
Thank you. Okay, the first thing I was going to say was that I revised the format to bring into the summary table and move the substantial detail to an appendix. So I'm pleased that that's met a favourable response. It's the first update to the audit committee in this financial year. Obviously, the COVID situation had a bearing on a number of the risk scores, so I will go through those for you. The risk register was substantially updated for Corporate Scrutiny Committee on the 9th of June, and there have been a few amendments since then as well. So I will go through the revised risk scores for you. With regard to risk number one, the financial in-year budget position for 19-20 was effectively pre-COVID. The impact on council expenditure of COVID is picked up in risk 14. Conversely, the financial resource for council's medium-term financial strategy is because of the significant impact so far in the 2021 budget, the risk score is substantially increased, and regular monitoring reports were sent to the Ministry for Communities, Housing and Local Government. CMT and Cabinet will be kept informed of the overall impact of additional expenditure. With regard to insufficient staffing capacity and skills in the current pandemic situation, the risk has increased. There has been a substantial level of redeployment of staff who were employed by services that are closed, such as leisure and libraries, to pandemic response activity. Risk four, the change in organisational culture fails to keep the pace with the speed of organisational change. This risk is actually reduced. The COVID situation and staff having to use agile equipment to work from home has largely been successful, and will likely reduce pressure on amounts of office accommodation required post-COVID. Failure to improve educational attainment. The Education Department advised me that because of the revised assessment process for this year, where exams were cancelled, there won't be data published on a local authority basis this year. Risk number six, the failure to identify situations where vulnerable children are subject to abuse. Services remained fully operational, and a greater proportion of face-to-face visits are now being undertaken. Risk number seven, failure to improve acceptable quality of professional practice across adult social care and housing needs. During the COVID situation, a number of teams had operated at an amber level through staff absence, although these risks have been largely mitigated through staff redeployment. As I mentioned earlier, a number of leisure centre staff were redeployed into the council's care homes. With regard to risk number 12, the risk has increased, obviously due to COVID and the situation in care homes on the Isle of Wight. Although the quality assurance team at the council has been constantly providing guidance to adult social care providers. In terms of meeting the required outcomes from integration of adult social care and health and risk 9, the council adopted discharge to assess requirements published by the NHS, and although more people have been entered residential care upon discharge than is usually the case, the community care group initially 12 months extended the funding to help facilitate that. An additional risk, which was flagged to me by the Director of Adult Social Care regarding adult social care provider failure in a sector that is, if you like, already under pressure, additional funding was approved by CMT, which was due to cease at the end of June, although that's now been extended for another 12 weeks. Risk 11 has been slightly reworded so that the mitigation can clearly separate the impact of the waste contract and the PFI, IWS PFI contract. The risk here has increased substantially, really due to the ceasing of work on the energy recovery plant due to the COVID situation. The Brexit relation number 12 remained steady, and the Brexit impact group's responsibilities and are now a subset of the council's overall recovery cell for COVID-19. With regard to risk 13, achieving the vision for the island, this risk has increased in score, largely due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the regeneration programme. Risk 14, the pandemic risk, if you like, has increased to the maximum level due to the financial consequences of the emergency. Government have provided additional funding, but the council is still forecasting a financial shortfall in the full financial year of £10 million. Risks 15 and 16, the mitigations for those risks that were put onto this register due to internal audits, as I say, the mitigation for these risks have both substantially been completed. So with that, I'd like to take any questions on the report or the appendix.
Are there any questions from the members?
Yeah, there's one from Michael Lilly.
Ah, Michael, you're muted. Yep, you just, that's it, you're now.
Okay. Just would like a little bit, thank you for the report, a little bit of further information. I mean, obviously, there's some unknowns, obviously, in Brexit, and obviously link that with 14 on the flu pandemic. What kind of mitigation do we need to sort of take? Because we could really, really be hit very, very hard in the winter, particularly on both of those, depending on what actually happens.
I'll answer that as best I can, Councillor Lilly. With regard to Brexit, obviously the situation regarding the terms in which we leave the European Union will be monitored very closely, and as the impact of those is perceived to increase, I would imagine that additional measures will need to be put in place by the recovery group.
Michael, if I may come in, Michael, let me say both the questions you asked about mitigation, until you know what the problem is, you don't know how you're going to mitigate it. It's one of these chicken and egg situations.
I realise that, but obviously there are different scenarios. I mean, one is whether we leave without a deal, and when we leave with a deal.
Sorry, Michael.
The other point about 14 is the particular risk, obviously, of a flu pandemic at the same time as COVID-19. And again, we would be working, I presume officers would be working on scenarios to look at different options or mitigation. That's what you do on your risk register.
There are a number of pieces of work taking place, I believe, regarding making operate plans extremely substantial, both for further outbreaks of COVID and for the flu and for the anticipated flu season.
Thank you.
No more questions, Councillor Lilly.
Adrian's got a question.
Yes, I have just one final one. It was, you mentioned about working remotely. And obviously that does bring into question of whether people need to return to offices as well. Is there going to be some kind of further look into this? Because, you know, there's swings and roundabouts of workers working remotely and the advantages that way, but there's also disadvantages in not having that kind of comradeship and working face-to-face, etc., with sort of colleagues and things. So it just concerns me that the possible savings could outweigh the possible efficiency.
Yes, I mean, obviously work is taking place on administration buildings as we speak to make them COVID-19 safe. So increased social distancing measures, that kind of thing. Any return to offices and a reduced number of staff in offices will need to be undertaken alongside a lot of other work that has been undertaken by the Corporate Services Director regarding putting those kind of measures in place for new ways of working so that people aren't isolated and staff are given the opportunity to regularly attend buildings. It's just that perhaps some services won't retain as big a footprint in office buildings, and or some will be shared between different services. So I think everybody is very much conscious regarding effectively it's the mental health situation for staff around isolation and missing those informal social interactions and working together in that way.
Thank you.
Councillor Axford.
I've actually got questions I'll bring under paper G, which link to some of the issue, for instance, on mental health and wellbeing. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Axford, you got a question?
Yes, I've got a question on page F5, which is item 11, where it says the risk is the failure of either the highways PFI contract or the waste contract. So we've got two big contracts we're talking about.
Yeah.
But in the commentary, it only talks really about the waste contract. And I just wonder whether all of that concern is to do with the waste contract. Is that in what the position is on the PFI contract at the moment?
If I can just follow up on that very quickly, David, is one of the things I asked is what before, there are two substantially different things, and really you're giving them one marker for the two, and is it possible to split them? So highways, PFI, and the energy recovery plan and everything else have two scores linked to each of them, because otherwise one could be good and one could be down. We can't determine which is which.
Okay, just to answer Councillor Axford first, wasn't really a substantial update regarding the highways PFI contract for this updated version. And Councillor Sindhur, I would be in agreement there and happy to separate those two risks. I think largely because the impacts are quite different. The highways PFI part of the risk is generally a financial impact, whereas obviously the waste part of it is financial in nature as well, but it's also environmental. So I would like to separate those two out, and I will do that for the next version I take to CMT.
Are you happy with that, Councillor Axford?
Yes, that answers the question, yes.
Great. Any more questions on the strategic risk at all? No? Okay. Then we go to the... We're asked to approve the strategic risk of the council as set out in paper F, paragraph 11 and appendix 1. So I need a proposer and a seconder. Chris proposed. Seconder. Michael, Councillor Lilly is going to second. The clerk will now call out each of our names and we ask for, against or abstain.
Councillor Axford.
For.
Councillor Barry?
For.
Councillor Kilpatrick?
For.
Councillor Lilly?
For.
Councillor Quirk?
For.
And Councillor Tindall?
For.
Unanimous, Chairman.
Okay, so that item is finished now. Now we go on to the next item, which is an update from the Chief Executive in relation to the pandemic section of the Strategic Risk Register, paper F, appendix 1, Strategic Risk 14, with particular regard to the financial aspect. Is John Medcalf there to do this?
I don't think he's here.
Who's that, sorry?
Oh, Kerry.
Sorry, Kerry. Yep. Okay. I think just the background to this is when it came to corporate scrutiny, there was a large paper and there was a section on the financial aspect, but it didn't really give a lot of detail, and members there and the same members on this committee wanted a bit more of an explanation about the finances. So if you can do that, I'd be grateful.
Okay. So, as reported to corporate scrutiny, the committee will be aware that currently we are estimating the financial impact of COVID-19 pandemic to be around about £10 million. So at the time of writing the report, we had received two tranches of emergency funding from the government, which totaled to £9 million. And that was set against our estimates for our spending pressures, which in total came to £8 million. We also anticipated some difficulty in delivering our budget savings of around that million. And then we looked at what our loss from fees and charges may be in terms of income, and that was expected to be in the order of £8 million. And then a further loss from council tax and business rates income of £32 million. So, as has already been mentioned during the course of the committee meeting this morning, that basically comes to an estimated additional cost and loss of income of £19 million, against which we received a government funding of £9 million, hence a £10 million gap. The key thing which has changed since the scrutiny committee information has been that the government have actually now developed a financial budget recovery plan. So that was taken to full council earlier this month, and the plan totals some £11.5 million. So therefore, that actually covers our £10 million gap that we've estimated so far, and it provides a small amount of headroom should that gap change. It should be emphasised that the estimates are still very much that estimates, and we don't know obviously the extent of the pandemic, the length of it, or the depth of the recession that's obviously going to follow. In terms of the deficit recovery plan, that includes putting some items of the capital programme on hold. That totals £4.5 million of the total plan. We've also estimated we would need to call on a corporate contingency of up to £2 million. We would set aside some of our transformation reserves, again up to a level of £2 million. And we have some earmarked reserves which we can now release, importantly, following the Christie King court decision, so that contributes to £3 million. So we now do have a budget plan to fill the gap. We should also note that since writing this report, the government has given a further trial of emergency funding. We knew that was coming, but at the time of writing the report, we didn't know what the allocation to the RY would be. We know now that that is £1.2 million, so that has alleviated the pressures to a small extent. We also know that the government is planning to introduce an income scheme whereby we can recover some of our losses of income. So for us, we estimate our losses to be circa £8 million. What we still don't know yet is how much of that we are likely to be able to cover through the government scheme. The details are not yet available, but should be out shortly. All we know at the moment is that the first 5% of any loss is deemed to be the responsibility of local authorities, but then there will be a scheme which helps to recover losses above that, again, to a certain amount. We don't exactly know what income streams are included in that and how it's been calculated. So we can't yet determine what our new gap may look like. We also know that we've got irrecoverable losses from council tax and business rates, which for us is currently estimated to be about £2 million. What the government has said regarding that is that we can offset those losses over a longer period of time. Normally, we would have to recover those in your next year's budget strategy, but we will be given 3 years in which to recover those. Again, the details of that are not yet available, but that will assist us in alleviating some of that pressure as well. That's the overall picture. If you have any questions, I'm happy to be asking for you.
Michael's got a question.
Sorry.
Michael Lilly.
Councillor Lilly, you've got a question?
And
Adrian.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Chris has got one as well.
Thank you, Kerry. That's a good update. Obviously, one of the things that hits councils is its statutory responsibilities, and the surprises in that, particularly obviously costs of, say, children coming into care. I believe we still have one child in care at a substantial cost. Have we got any kind of indicators on those kind of surprise areas, which tend to be in adult social care and children's, right? And I suppose, COVID and post-COVID is obviously could throw up you know, various risk areas. We know domestic violence is going up, which affects children coming into care. We know that obviously mental health has an effect, and we know that there's increases of residents with trauma, etc. So I just wanted to put in that is in your 10 million taking into consideration the possibility of high costs coming through statutory responsibilities?
Yes, certainly quite a large proportion of the estimated cost at the moment is around adult social care. It's not so much the additional support that's being provided as a result of additional clients. It's more the supporting the care providers at the moment to get them through the pandemic because of the additional costs that they are incurring. So there is obviously that has been one of my key strategic duties that is like key call on our emergency funding. In terms of children's, we are keeping a very close eye on what the impact may be in terms of additional children that are after numbers. So we have to report to the government on a monthly basis. So as that information is available from the relevant directors, we are factoring that into our updated gap position. So at the moment, in short answer to your question, yes, the £10 million gap does take into account adult social care sector responsibilities and children's social care, but it will be constantly updated as more intelligence, more information comes forward.
Thank you very much.
Adrian, you have a question?
Yes.
Sorry, Councillor Axford, sorry.
At the end of your report, you said that there was a deficit on council tax. I think you said it was about £2 million. But I would have thought the number was much higher than that. Could you explain what this particular two million is about, please?
Yes, there are some elements of council tax which are purely deferring council tax. So that actually won't contribute towards a gap at the end of the financial year. So, for example, if people are given a longer period of time in which to pay their council tax, maybe then into 12 months rather than the normal 10 months installment plan, that won't actually have a net impact. What the £2 million represents, and it's about 2% of our council tax income, is where we think that there will be payment failure. So in other words, that people will not be able to afford to make their council tax payments in full, and there will be an element of debt that we cannot recover. Again, as I said, there are only estimates. We are getting updated information on a monthly basis from the council tax team in order to feed back to the government. So it is possible that that number will change. Again, it's very much dependent on the impact of the recession and the impact that, that has on our council taxpayers on the eyes white and their ability to continue to pay the council tax. So we're, you know, it's a relatively small percentage of the estimation at the moment, but it will be kept under review.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Axford. Councillor Quirk, do you not have a question on this at all? About the finance? No. No more questions from any of the members then. Then I think we will just note this update. And thank you very much, Kerry, for that. It is very much a moving feast. Right. Next item.